You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 11th of July 2015 on Monocle 24. From Thessaloniki to Tokyo via Istanbul and Porto, from London street fashion or contemporary art to a stylish supplement from Italy's Financial Daily, the world's printing presses are churning and we'll be reviewing the results today on The Stack. Today on the programme, we'll be speaking to our editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, who happens to be at our Tokyo bureau. He'll be telling us why some Asian newsstands just win hands down. We'll also be welcoming trusted friend of The Stack, Jeremy Leslie, as he announces an important date in the magazine aficionado's calendar and talks us through some of his favourite new issues too. Plus, we'll be heading to Greece where, crisis or no crisis, a team of photographers and journalists are going about creating a beautiful travel publication.
I like to make a motion about the design, not to share the informations or the aesthetic value. It means that I serve the content, and the content gives me back values.
All that and plenty more besides, ahead today on The Stack, Monocle's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. We start the show as, well, almost as always, by checking in with our Tyler Brulé, our editor-in-chief, who the last time we spoke was in the charming environs of Murano. We now find him in Tokyo. Tyler, very good day to you. Tell us, how's your international travels been? I gather you've chalked off a few stops since we last spoke.
Tom, I'm not just in Tokyo. I'm in the Tokyo bureau. We might as well be sitting beside each other because listen to the audio quality we have on a Saturday morning.
It's pretty good.
It is very good. This is the ISDN line out of the Monocle bureau in Tomigaya. And I'm feeling well-traveled after the week. How's your week of travel been?
Pretty good. It's been, I mean, it was coloured somewhat by an industrial action on the London Underground. I don't think you want to hear about this right now, Tyler. You're probably in too good a mood to hear about my two-hour commute. but I imagine yours has been rather more pleasant. Any particular highlights as you've been on your travels?
We always like landing in Hong Kong Airport because it is one of the single biggest sales points in the world for our magazine, Tom, and that's no small feat. There are 15 kiosks in Hong Kong Airport. So I always like going through there. And I wish Hong Kong, or at least I wish that other retailers, other airports around the world would look at the Hong Kong model because, and I'm not saying this because we sell a lot of magazines there. There's a reason why we sell a lot of magazines there. It's because they do it really, really well. They understand that they're an international airport. And that means you've got a great selection of Japanese magazines. You've got a great selection of German titles and titles in Mandarin and Korean as well. So you can really sort of set yourself up for the long haul. And there are two players at the airport. There's Relay, of course, the big international French-based group. And then there's a local player, Page One. And they're almost pretty evenly split. I think one of them has 8 kiosks. Another one has, you know, 7. And I guess the other point out of all of this as well, the airport hasn't just given it to one operator. One of the, you know, the great problems, I think, in our business, the business of the news trade, is so often at major transport hubs, magazine, newspaper distribution is in the hands of one company. It works well in Hong Kong because there's competition.
And now, Tyler, one final thought. It's a big week for Monocle Imprint as well. We've got another new edition joining our
I haven't seen it yet.
It's a thing of beauty. If you could distill pure sunshine onto a printed page, Tyler, it would look something like The Escapist. How excited are you to add this to the roster of Monocle?
Well, clearly I'm excited because I haven't seen the damn thing. When I left, we just sent it off to bed. It's been to press. We tried to ensure delivery, and I was asking, I think you guys probably got copies in the office on Wednesday. I was on my way to Tokyo at that point. And all of our normal courier companies, they said, nope, there's no way you're going to get a copy, you know, to Japan by Saturday morning. So I have to wait until tomorrow, till I touch down, but I'm hoping that there'll be a nice, doesn't even have to be wrapped. It's, as you said, it's just bursting with sunshine. I'll see it glowing from the back seat. So I'm dying to see the edition, but I'm glad it's got your thumbs up.
Oh, it's definitely got my seal of approval, and we'll have a very special edition of The Stack, Tyler, next week, all about The
Escapist. Can't wait.
Everyone around the world will be waiting for. Tyler Brulé in Tokyo, as you said, in our bureau there. Thanks very much for joining us here on The Stack. You're listening to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Now it's time for me to introduce our guest today on the show, although to many Stack listeners, he'll need no introduction whatsoever. It's Jeremy Leslie, a magazine design consultant who, amongst many other things, set up and runs Mag Culture, a blog that's become an important reference for those in the industry. He also busies himself with organising the annual Modern Magazine Conference, another favourite of us and our listeners. Without further ado, let's welcome him back to the show, Jeremy. Great to see you as always.
Good to be here.
Let's start off by talking a little bit about the conference. How's the preparations going? Anticipation, excitement, building.
Oh, it's building.
Put us in the picture.
Well, it's the third time we've done it. We put the tickets on sale slightly earlier this year. We were trying to get a bit ahead of ourselves, but we've got a fantastic list of the first few names that are going to be appearing and talking. It takes place on October the 29th. Our keynote speaker is Scott Dadich, who is the editor-in-chief of Wired in the US, so we're bringing him over. He's a fantastic editorial guru of both digital and print, and he's doing a fantastic job over at, in San Francisco on Wired. He's built an extraordinarily creative-led team of experts in all fields, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing him talk about that project. It's a very exciting project that's going on there. It's very much I think, leading the way for many other magazines to follow.
And do you think that, once again, that sort of intersection of, you know, digital and traditional print will again be very much a focus? It'll be something that's, I guess, because it's relevant to the delegates who are going to be there, to the speakers, it's something that is front and centre, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, the last couple of times we've done the Modern Magazine, we didn't really have a theme as such, but inevitably both the kind of relationship between print and digital bubbled to the top each time. This time I think we're meeting that idea head on. We've very deliberately, with Scott is a great proponent. He did a lot of work on the early iPad magazines, but we've also got speakers both from print and from digital. I'm particularly excited to have Sophie Lovell, who's the editor-in-chief of Uncube, which is a very interesting online magazine project, pure play digital, no print element. But then also some magazines that will be very familiar to listeners and readers of Mag Culture. We've got the editor-in-chief, Christina, from Flaneur in Berlin. Charlotte Heal, who recently redesigned Kinfolk. More to come.
And a host of others. And just tell me, I mean, do you sort of, with the event, do you feel it's clearly for sort of magazine aficionados, but is it a sort of an industry event, or is it for readers? Is it business oriented? Does it have a foot pretty easily in both of those camps, do you think?
I think it crosses both, plus professionals and students, but I think also there's now such, I think there's interest in a much broader sense in content and presentation of content. So whilst on the one hand, I think if you're involved in magazine making, you can get a lot out of the day from celebrating what you do and hearing other people talking about similar projects to what you're already involved in. I think people beyond that world can benefit from hearing about how what are some pretty cutting edge projects are doing to develop storytelling both online and in print.
And, you know, it's always good to sort of gauge people's general sense of the marketplace. Is the event, is it always the conference, is it an upbeat thing? I mean, obviously, we always look for the positive messages, the good news stories out of print in particular. Are you sort of always reassured that that's what it'll be like again? Or do you think, again, it only reflects the fact that there are commercial concerns, there are difficulties facing some sections of the business?
I don't think we shy away from the difficulties that the industry presents, but I mean, the day is intended to be, have an upbeat feel to it. But I'm sure, particularly as we tackle the relationship between print and digital this year, I think I'm sure there'll be voices arguing in various ways that, you know, I want it to be a celebration. That's how the thing started. But I also want it to be dealing with some of the issues that need to be dealt with.
And ask the tough questions along the way as well. Yeah. Well, it's always a bit of a highlight, and I'm sure people can find out more information through the usual Mag Culture channels and
magculture.com,
so on, so on and so forth.
Early bird tickets are on sale.
Oh, well, it's going to be great fun as always, I'm sure, Jeremy. Well, let's tuck into a stack of magazines. We're all about the print here, after all. And where should we start? We're going to be heading to Greece, well, sort of Greece via Portugal and Istanbul a little later. But you've got a few intriguing titles with you. And I see you've reached for one, which I wanted to ask you about. So why don't we start with
Well, we'll start here in London with Mush Pit, which is a recent discovery. I think it's actually up to somewhere around issue 7 or 8. But only recently came across that. We featured it on the journal online recently. And I think sometimes, you know, I mean, we always talk very seriously about what we do and about magazine making. This is just really great fun. It's anarchic. It's it parodies things. It's about fashion and youth culture and society and politics and da-da-da. And it's just, it's got its tongue firmly in cheek.
Absolutely. Well, give us the cover story, because we're talking about, it couldn't broadcast fun and irreverence any louder, because it's lurid. There's vibrant colours. Well, for a start,
I mean, it's, you know, so many small indie magazines now are beautifully presented on matte stock. This is full on glossy to the point of being slightly tacky. There's a garish logo. There's a model's butt in jeans with really dodgy looking sewn on patches, etc. It sets the tone. But then inside, there are fake adverts for depressing developments in London with some fantastic, the sells are that it's close to amenities, 24-hour gym facilities, no poor people. So it's humour with a cutting edge. There's some lovely shoots in there. There's a handbag shoot with each handbag lovingly placed on the top of a cistern in a public toilet. There's a get the look feature where various models are encouraged to dress like their grandmothers.
I'm liking the sound of it. What do we know about the team? Clearly, they're having a lot of fun with it, which, as you said, sings off every page. Are they sort of mag enthusiasts? Is this a pet project? What's their sort of
Yes. They do have a background in the industry. They are venting their spleen on a side project, I think. You don't want to sort of think about it too much like that. I mean, they're obviously, they are working photographers and stylists and designers, but I don't think you want to sort of look at the provenance. I think you want to look at it as a sort of entity in its own right.
It's lots of fun. That's Mosh Pit out of London. Jeremy's
highly recommended.
Picked.
Highly recommended.
And we'll be hearing more from Jeremy later in the show. He's got a selection of others that I'm intrigued to talk about. Up next, though, on the stack, we're going to head to Greece to find out how one particular travel magazine's been riding out the crisis with a trip to Porto. Stay tuned.
It's big, handsome, and we'll spend the whole summer by your side. It's the sun-dappled July-August Quality of Life double issue, and it's waiting for you now. Here's what our editors have lined up.
In culture, we look at media at the heart of the city, visiting those cool cats at New York Magazine, Cadena Ser in Madrid, and Radio Liban in Beirut.
In the design section, we meet the Swedish firm excelling in the growing world of wooden high-rises.
In the edit section, we meet three startups improving city living in Oslo, Paris, and Hong Kong.
The July-August issue is on sale now, or make your life easier with a subscription. Visit monocle.com to join the club.
You're listening to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. This last week has been a week pretty much like no other for Greece, as the country battles an economic crisis that's seen its banks close and daily life severely disrupted by the resulting lack of cash. Just last month, however, a team of Greek creatives were busying themselves publishing the third issue of their English-language travel magazine, Nomas. This biannual black-and-white hefty publication, edited by a team of Greek photographers and journalists, is for the contemporary nomad, the urban traveller. Nomas focuses on a selected destination every time. With Istanbul under their belts, Sakis Yanidis talked with them as they were finishing off their Porto issue.
There are five tips for choosing a nice, humble little restaurant in Istanbul, as the influential American blogger Ansel Mullins describes in the new international Nomas magazine. Istanbul was the second travel destination for the biannual English-speaking edition with Greek origins. Among interviews of Turkey's political scientists and painters, we read diaries, journals and poems by Nazım Hikmet and Yücel Karayan. Nomas won't tell you where to eat or drink, says the publisher and well-known photographer Yanis Bournias.
Nomas is a Greek word and it means a nomad. Nomas is a biannual edition with the traveler's soul. Each issue is dedicated to a different destination, not necessarily a city. Nomas is a traveler. It's an eternal traveler, a voyager, let's say, an el eterno viajero, as Fernando Pessoa would say, as we're coming up now with the Porto issue. Nomas came right in the middle of the crisis, and the idea is diaries and photographs, diaries of the past, journals of the present, and of course, lots of photography. Nomas is not a travel magazine or a city guide. We won't tell you where to eat or drink, but we will tell you how it tasted to eat a delicious fish sandwich under the bridge of Galata in Istanbul, or how the Portuguese bacalao served in a humble fish taverna by the river Douro in Porto melts into the mouth.
I'm flipping the pages of the Istanbul issue along with Yanis Karlopoulos, the magazine's creative director. Nomas is printed in a rather big 22 to 30 centimeters format, all in black and white except from a 16-page burst of color right in the magazine heart, illustrating the latest tendencies of art, design and architecture of the visited destination. Karlopoulos explains why the magazine is printed in a rough white paper and the reason you won't read the title unless you look at the cover's bottom.
Nowadays, because magazines become like jewelry, it's more like an item, a piece of typographic art. So the paper is white, no gloss, of course, it's matte paper.
We don't see the city on the cover.
Exactly, exactly. We can see only the N, the logo and the title, and a rectangle and square photography. So I add the title at the bottom. Now, you have to see the whole magazine, the whole publication. You have to see the whole picture, not only the title.
Bournias tells me he spends a lot of time strolling in the ocean coast of Porto for the new issue. The team stayed about 10 days in the field, gathering information, organizing interviews, feeling and tasting the place. Despite the fact that they exclude the term lifestyle from their vocabulary, the magazine does include fashion inside its 100 pages.
So our fashion editorials have a sense of narrative, and they're not what you would expect of a fashion editorial. At least we believe so. It is important for Nomas to make a distinction in the way it sees fashion, it sees food, it sees everything. We choose to go to a destination and make all the productions there, like all the photography productions, to meet people who live there, who work there, who cook there, who write there, who sing there, and we present them in our magazine. The journalists and our contributors focus on the place essence in terms of everything, in terms of food, in terms of architecture, in terms of poetry, in terms of people, in terms of everything that gives the feeling of a destination. In the upcoming Porto issue, we have interviewed very, very significant people who live and work in Portugal, such as Miguel Veiga or Walter Hugo Maia, very famous writer. And of course, Alvaro César Vieira, who is one of the greatest architects alive.
The page's layout is clean. The white spaces serve as frames for the content, which is accompanied by a single striking photograph. The typeset, chosen by Karlopoulos, is the famous Times New Roman in an effort, as he says, to bring out the content.
It's completely naturalized, the style, the design, and my philosophy about the design is to leave the content speak. I follow grids, shapes, merge white spaces in an organic relation between the content and the... Because I like to make emotion about the design, not to share the informations or the aesthetic value. It means that I serve the content, and the content gives me back values.
Nomas is published in Greece and is distributed in newsstands, bookshops and galleries in 19 countries in Europe, Asia, South Africa and United States. Despite the crisis hitting Greece, this passionate group of editors and designers are managing to print a high-quality conceptual travel magazine. Right now, Nomas team is scattered across their next destination, which is a secret well kept. For Monocle, in Thessaloniki, Greece, I'm Sakis Ioannidis.
And that was a report on the rather handsome Nomas magazine from Greece made last month. Our man in Thessaloniki, Sakis, assures us the Nomas team have every intention of carrying on with the magazine despite some unsavoury local difficulties. I think it's a polite way to term it, Jeremy. I mean, it is interesting, isn't it, that you do get these bursts of creativity and they can come from places where, you know, the publishing sector might be a bit embattled. We were hearing this week that, you know, some publishing houses in Greece are quite literally running out of paper to make their products.
I'm sure, yeah.
But it doesn't mean that you can't get, you know, good creative minds doing good creative work.
No, indeed. I mean, in theory, it's not about money. It's about the will to make something creative. And sometimes a bad situation is a great spur to creativity. It's the old sort of conundrum, should the government sponsor the arts? I mean, yes, they should. But on the other hand, some fine art comes out when there have been huge cuts to the art. I mean, there's a big discussion around that. But it's the same here, I think. I mean, obviously, these magazines come out of pre-difficulty. Yeah. Greece. It'd be interesting to see how they deal with the future.
What do you make of Nomas? You've had a browse through a couple of, we've got the Porto and Istanbul editions.
It's really interesting to hear the creator director Yanis talk about the sort of magazines as jewellery. I warm to the magazine the more I look at it, but it's not something that kind of whacks you around the face and think, wow, this is amazing. I suspect it probably repays a lot of attention that I haven't had time to really have a good look at and read it. There's some beautiful photography, but it's interestingly flat in tone visually. I'm not knocked out by it, if I'm honest.
Well, there's sort of almost something fairly sort of old-fashioned almost about the presentation.
Yeah, maybe that's right for the situation and right for where it comes from.
Well, let's press on. That's Nomas that we were hearing about. Mm-hmm. Let's press on, Jeremy, shall we, with your stack of magazines. Well, where should we turn next?
I was going to just sneak in a quick reference to Der Grief, which is a German photography magazine, which on the face of it is quite straightforward proposition. It's photography, it's beautifully presented, beautifully printed, very little design or art direction beyond that, although a lot of care has gone into that. But what they do, and if you have a close look at some of the spreads, there's a picture in which that features some jelly, and then just on the edge of the page, way away from the picture, there's a little bit of jelly mark on the edge of the page. So there's just, whilst the photography itself is very reverentially treated and very seriously presented, there's this little piece of fun going on the page where there's some pictures of outdoors and there's a little bit of soil in the bottom corner. It's done to the point where at first you think there's been something's badly printed
or little,
something's gone wrong.
Marks. No, it's very clever.
The other thing with it, I think, is that it's the front cover again is very straightforward. It has, unlike Nomas we were hearing from Yanis there, the logo is at the top of the page and there's just a squared off picture. But again, it's just a stunning picture. It's a young redhead freckled boy against a very vivid blue background. And it just shows the power of simple print.
Yeah,
it's really striking.
That's a quintessentially timeless cover, isn't it?
Yeah,
it could be
absolutely.
Any time in the last 60,
but you keep Madeline, who writes quite a lot of contributions for the journal now. We've been talking about, and it's a cover you keep returning to. It's really compelling, and it's the photograph that makes it. But there's, you know, it's beautiful.
Let's continue through the stack. You've got what about MacGuffin? Tell me a little bit about this one, because people will be familiar with maybe the concept of MacGuffin as it speaks to movies and you know, Hitchcock famously sort of obsessed. Yeah. What does the printed MacGuffin tell us?
Well, this is a new magazine, issue one. It's like a number of magazines recently. It's looking at life through the medium of things, of items, using items to tell stories. In this case, it's a whole issue. And when I say a whole issue, it's a good 220-odd pages about the bed, which might be quite limiting in some in some people's minds if I should leave it
at
that.
We've seen some other titles out, which like design magazines, that have focused in on a single piece of furniture.
I mean, Dirty Furniture is one
exactly
example,
that.
And their second issue's due. They do it with a perhaps a more cultural reference points, TV shows and other uses of the sofa, etc. Which there's an element here with this first issue about the bed. They look behind the scenes of Airbnb apartments and beds. There's a lovely photo shoot about birds' nests in terms of taking the idea of bed a little further. There's a look at bed patents. And there's kind of various.
That's one of those things that's probably. Exactly. You never realised that would be as interesting
the
as
the world
it
of the bed.
Is.
Yes. You know, we spend 8 hours a day, a third of our life in it, and yet we tend to just take it for granted. Well, this magazine tries to redress that, I think. Very successfully.
Balance.
And I should add, it's beautifully compiled and looks great. It's in lots of different papers and colour backgrounds, and It's a really printed object.
And what about their MacGuffin motif? Because they have quite a sort of striking, you know, hand-drawn M,
yes,
sort of emblazoned across the cover. Well, how do you feel about that, Jeremy?
Well, feel is the word, isn't it? Feel. Yeah. Well, with there only being one issue, it's quite hard to. I assume that will remain present. I mean, it is a huge hand-drawn M that's just struck right across the cover. And then the actual name and the subject is in much smaller typeset font. I think it's very strong, partly because the M is finished in a gloss against a matte background, which sets the tone. There's an interesting kind of half-tone effect on the cover where this sort of rough graphic versions of a pair of pillows is overlaid over a photograph of, I think it's Charlotte Rampling, on a bed. I mean, yeah, they're using really nice graphic techniques alongside the really powerful kind of editorial idea that underlies the whole thing. It's a very exciting first issue, I think.
Fantastic. Well, good job from MacGuffin. Now, what else have we got? Have we got any other things?
Do you want more?
Why not?
Absolutely. I do have the latest copy of Eel.
So you have Eel. This is a sort of summer edition. And actually, in the stack, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, we did an edition from Forte di Marmi in Tuscany.
Right.
And Tyler and Andrew Tuck were singing the praises of none other than this very summery issue, because there's pretty much, you can almost sort of feel the warmth of the sun's rays emanating off the cover, can't you? It's summer distilled.
It's got a beautiful front cover with that kind of bleached out yellow image. Slightly tongue-in-cheek image of a cool-looking Italian guy in a bathrobe with an inflatable alligator under his arm. It's very the Italian beach experience personified in one image.
Absolutely. And just a quick thought. I mean, there are some great magazines. This is one that's, you know, it's not maybe as accessible. Certainly, you know, here in London,
it's a shame. Sort of thing. Yeah.
And that's something that hopefully will change.
Absolutely. It's something. I mean, I have been talking to them about trying to get copies over here to sell, because I mean, we talked about the front cover. But visually, it's always so inventive, typographically and art direction-wise. The content of this magazine is so beautifully presented and so heavily worked, and it's a stunning piece of editorial creativity that gets missed because it's from Italy, and the Italian magazines don't tend to make their way over here very often. I hope to change that.
There you go. He's a man on a mission, as ever. It's Jeremy Leslie. Jeremy from MacCulture, thanks very much for coming to see us, as ever, on The Stack. I'm sure we'll speak to you again before conference time, but good to keep us posted.
Keep an eye on the journal in the meantime for updates on speakers.
We will do. Jeremy, thanks very much for being with us, as always.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And that does indeed bring us to the end of this edition 150 of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Thanks in particular to my studio guest today, Jeremy Leslie of MacCulture. And thanks to our producer, David Pleasant, and Claire Urban behind the glass, as always. Comments or queries are welcome. info@monocle.com is where you need to send them. And join us again at the same time next week. For this week's episode, though, that's all we've got time for. Goodbye.